Hey, it's Nathan Crane, director of the Health and Healing Club and host of the Conquering Cancer Summit. And today I am honored and excited to welcome you to a very special interview.
Today we are joined by Dr. Suzanne Kim, mm-hmm. who is a medical doctor who is one of the senior physicians here at the Cancer Center for Healing. She has a primary focus in IPT, insulin potentiated therapy, which is a low-dose chemo. We're going to talk about what it is, why they do it, how it's effective, any concerns you might have, anything you want to know about IPT, which is actually quite fascinating as a treatment protocol for anybody dealing with cancer. So stick around with us for that. And Dr. Kim, thank you so much for joining us. And you know, you have a fascinating background and kind of history you were sharing with me a moment ago mm-hmm. about what not only got you into medicine, but you know, how you started your career and then how you transitioned to an integrative mm-hmm. Doctor, and why don't you share with us a little bit about sure. that?
Yeah. Well, first, I just want to thank you, Nathan, for having me today.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be here. So I've been practicing for 20 years now, and I am board certified in family practice, and I first got into medicine because I had a passion for prevention, mm. preventing disease and make sure that patients are healthy. And so for the first 10 years when I was practicing, I felt that you do all the things for prevention to help people, but there's a lot of patients that were coming in that were chronically sick,
yeah.
chronically ill. And I was finding that there are patients that I wasn't able to help. So after about 10 years, I started to feel a little burned out because I wasn't feeling that I was really making the difference that I wanted to in people's lives, and really, you know, for example, preventing cancer or preventing some of these illnesses that patients were getting.
So you're a family physician, mm-hmm. and what were a lot of the kind of common illnesses that you were seeing in people?
Well, I was treating the bread and butter types of issues like hypertension, mm-hmm. diabetes, trying to prevent cardiovascular disease. I saw cancer patients as well. So, you know, as a primary care, you're the liaison, mm-hmm. and you kind of have that big picture. So I would send patients out to specialists when they needed to see what is going on. You know, a lot of patients say they have allergies, send them to the allergist. They come back and, you know, they said, oh, well, the allergist said I don't have any allergies. They were tested. Mm. So, you know, they would have rashes and things. So it was, I was getting a little frustrated, and these patients were frustrated, and they were seeking alternative care or seeking out their own treatments.
Yeah.
From various sources.
They weren't getting better, even though you're sending them to all kinds of
exactly.
specialists.
Exactly, and I could understand why they would do that.
Sure.
And I, you know, had sent them to all the specialists. So I listened to them. I just listened to them. I monitored them. They would come, they would still want to see me,
yeah.
even though I felt like I wasn't helping them, but they would just come in and say, well, this is what I'm doing now. What do you think? And I said, well, I would try to research and look up what they were doing and make sure that they weren't hurting themselves with any of the treatments that they were trying out. A lot of patients were doing acupuncture, and at that time, acupuncture was a little controversial mm-hmm. at that point as well. Now it's much, you know, well accepted,
right.
but at
very
that
well
point,
understood scientifically.
Understood at that time, it wasn't. Mm. But I did. A lot of people did see results from acupuncture, so I felt comfortable. Although I didn't understand how it worked.
Did you dissuade them from using alternative treatments, or you just kind of you wanted to learn more about it yourself?
I did not dissuade them. I was very open because I think that when you are suffering and when you're having pain or whatever you're having, you're looking for a solution, and I would do the same thing. In fact, for me, I did have some of my own health issues mm-hmm. as well, which I wasn't getting any relief from traditional medicine that was recommended to me. So luckily, I stumbled on some alternative therapies, which I'll talk to you about, which kind of started to lead me down a different path. But I would listen to these patients. They would come in, and I would try to research some of the things that they were doing. I wanted to make sure that they were not overdosing on supplements. Yeah. A lot of them are taking enormous amounts of supplements. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a bit concerned about those dosages.
Sure.
And I just wanted to make sure they didn't hurt themselves because they're asking me for advice. But they were getting relief, and I was, you know, just taking note of what they were doing and, you know, what worked, what seemed to work, what didn't work.
Mm.
So I just was kind of observing, but I really didn't have a lot of input for them at that point.
Well, you were being more of what we might call the doctor of the future. as I've interviewed Dr. Keneally before, actually for my documentary, we have a short snippet of her on our website called The Doctor of the Future. And that's exactly, you know, unfortunately so many people don't have primary care physicians like you with such an open mind, and, kind of a scientific mind, more of observing, you know, without putting in your own... well, you shouldn't do natural medicine because they told us, you know, that doesn't work, so don't do that.
Right.
Instead of that, you were open, you were observing, you were wanting to help, you were, you know, learning yourself. Like, that is the mind, I believe, of the doctor of the future, right? It's how all doctors, if they want to really help their patients, should be. And unfortunately, so many people don't have that experience with their doctors. They have the opposite.
Right.
They say, oh, I'm using this alternative medicine, or I'm using these natural supplements or these herbs or whatever, and they're told, don't do that, you know. So it's it's actually refreshing to hear you, know, who being so open to really wanting to find the best results for your patients. It's beautiful, yeah.
Right, so the first thing that, when I was working in a practice with some other physicians, we started to do some nutritional medicine, bringing in nutritionist, and I started to see some really amazing results with nutrition. I got very excited about that because, you know, if we can avoid using medicines, I think that's better because there's a lot of side effects with medicines. So we saw just, you know, we'd always had known that with certain conditions, diabetes, you know, diabetic diet, but this was using it to help with overall any patient really. For weight loss, and we saw patients. I see patients getting better with all of their conditions.
What were some of the primary principles of that nutritional plan that you were implementing?
At the time, we were actually using Metagenics because I think that they had to come out with the whole plan, and they had some nutritionists or dietitians that had a plan in place. And so they had a very specific plan where they were, you know, a lot of low sugar, not the traditional food pyramid that I was taught.
Right.
So they were using low sugar, it was lots of vegetables and fruits, and kind of, I guess it was maybe more paleo now, as we know
more
it.
Plant-based. More just natural whole foods.
Whole foods, exactly. Avoiding all of the processed foods.
Yep.
And so with doing that, I saw some really interesting results and got excited. And then somehow the doctor I was working with, she found out about some homeopathic medications that we started to bring into the office.
Yeah.
And I used them because, and I didn't really know, I just, you know, they were simple, easy to use.
Safe. Right.
So I would just say, well, if you're interested, you can try this. I really didn't know how they worked. So patients, I found they were working well, and I tried them on myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, it really works. And I'm the type of person that gets the side effect of any medication, like every side effect. I take, for example, if I took pseudoephedrine, I would get the heart palpitations, and I would be tired but wired at the same time, and I would get all the side effects. So so it was hard for me. So I'm very sensitive to medications and anything over the counter. And so when I took the homeopathic, I was like, wow, I don't have any side effects, but I feel relief from my symptoms. So that was interesting, and I saw patients say that it was helping them. So that got me really intrigued because I said, I don't know how this works. It works. So that's when I signed up to take a course in homeopathy. And I think that really is where that set my trajectory.
Interesting.
Because it really blew my mind, honestly, because, you know, it kind of goes against everything that you're taught.
Right.
Everything that you're taught.
I did an interview, and I encourage people to go watch it with one of your colleagues here at the center, where we talk quite a bit about homeopathy and, you know, the fact that it's basically a sugar pill with a microscopic dose of some kind of, you know, plant medicinal, plant therapeutic, right? Mm-hmm. And yet the results are extraordinary, what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. It's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So I went to this course, and I was going with my colleague at the time, and I remember the first day we went to this course, what we were told is that, you know, it's been around, it works. We don't really know, at the time they said, we don't really know how it works, but it's been around and it's been working.
Yeah.
And so.
We don't know how it works, but it works.
Yeah. Which, and now, you know, we understand how it works, but at that time.
How does it work?
How does it
work?
So they found that, first of all, I don't think they had instruments to be able to really see if there was, verify that there was, you know, the smallest amount of whatever substance that they're using. Mm-hmm. So now they have instruments that they can actually detect that there is, you know, the smallest amounts of the substance that's being diluted, because you're diluting a substance and you've got micro, you know, amounts of it in there.
You might take an herb or a combination of herbs or something, right? Mm-hmm. And they dilute it all the way down until it's like microscopic.
Right. There's like, you know, numbers that you'll see, and mm-hmm. that's the dilution mm-hmm. that you'll see. And so they, so I think it was immeasurable at, you know, early on, because this was developed many, many years ago.
Yeah.
And they had no way of knowing. But now we have the ability to see that. So so the interesting thing I will say is that when I was taking this course, it was all homeopaths, and they didn't really understand. They just understand their field of homeopathy. Subsequent to homeopathy, I was introduced to kinesiology, and the kinesiology, mostly a lot of the chiropractors that, you know, do the field of kinesiology. And they understood homeopathy, and they explained homeopathy to me. So that was interesting, because I realized it seems that a lot of people have a little piece of the puzzle or a piece of the pie, but people don't know what other people know in other fields. So I think that it was interesting to hear the kinesiologists say they understood homeopathy when the homeopaths said they did. And so they were explaining the energy of the substance, that vibrational energy. So mm-hmm. it kind of goes into what's now known as energy medicine.
Yep.
And understanding that, which goes in line with homeopathy's law, the law of similars, which is that like treats like.
Ah.
So, you know, I try to explain, a good analogy I explain to people is, if you've got a tuning fork that's vibrating a specific frequency, and you bring another tuning fork of the same frequency, what happens if you bring them close to each other?
They start resonating at the same frequency.
No, they cancel each other out.
Oh, when they're already vibrating at the same. Yeah, then
they cancel out. Uh-huh. So similarly in homeopathy, when they say the law of similars, like treats like,
yeah.
Then you take a substance, and when you dilute it down,
okay.
It will treat the same symptoms that substance or causes. For example, classic homeopathic medication that's one of my favorites, Apis mellifica, is actually a whole crushed honeybee.
Okay.
And when you think about a bee and some of the, well, if you get a bee sting, mm-hmm. what happens? You get swelling, pain, redness. So if you take homeopathic Apis mellifica, it actually treats those exact same symptoms.
Ah,
it's the perfect antidote for a bee sting,
uh-huh.
But it's treating symptoms. So it can also be used to treat anything else. For example, it can be used for any other reaction, like hives. You've got red, you know, big red bump that's hot, swollen, and it's improves with cool.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. So if you, that's kind of a simple way to explain it,
okay.
But I think that's the way that I think most people can understand that, you know, that's what's happening. So
it reminds me of stinging nettle. right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you walk by and stinging nettle, if you've ever been hiking, right, you've probably at some point in your life had stinging nettle in your legs, and it'll give you a rash, it'll give you hives. Well, the antidote for that is to chew up the nettle, mm-hmm. right, and your saliva actually counteracts it, so you don't get the sting in your mouth, and you take the poultice that you've just chewed up, and the medicine for the stinging from the barbs is inside the plant itself. So the same medicine is actually the cure for the ailment from the plant is in the plant. And you rub it on and the hives go away.
Wow, I didn't know that. I learned something new.
We both learned something new today. So that's really fascinating about homeopathic medicine. So is it true for all homeopathic medicine that it's you're actually dealing more with that you're treating from the symptoms of the... Like, because don't they use certain plants and herbs and things like that to utilize the benefits of those to treat whatever symptoms or cause that people are experiencing?
Right.
Or no? Maybe I understand that wrong.
Right, yeah. So actually, there is confusion. I think sometimes people say, they use homeopathy as a blanket for all medicinal herbal treatments.
Yeah.
And it is true. It's not the same.
Okay.
So there are medicinal herbs, herbs that are known to have benefits in their pure form. Mm. You use them for their medicinal benefits.
Turmeric is anti-inflammatory.
Exactly. But in homeopathy, what you're doing is, there's actually a lot of the homeopathics are substances that are toxic.
So it's the opposite. Okay, so that's where like treats like.
So
I actually didn't know that. I'm learning something new today as well.
Okay.
So thank you.
Right,
I hope you're learning something new as well.
Right, so a lot of people I do, sometimes I don't clarify it always, but I try to explain that to patients.
Yeah.
There is a difference. You do have your natural remedies, which are used for the properties of that substance. In homeopathy, it's kind of, it's different.
Mm.
It's you're taking a substance that actually would be toxic in its true form. Another example, Roustox,
mm-hmm.
That is poison ivy. So you would never take poison ivy get poison ivy.
Yeah.
But Roustox is poison ivy.
Yeah.
And it's been diluted down. And it's the perfect antidote for poison ivy. But it also treats anything that acts in similar, has symptoms of poison ivy.
Wow.
So that kind of may be helpful to clarify.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. The difference between homeopathy and, natural, using herbals.
Right.
Yeah, it's okay. Different.
Okay, wow, beautiful. So from homeopathy to here at the Cancer Center for Healing, you do a lot of work with IPT.
IPT is insulin potentiation therapy. That's what it stands for. So what we're doing with this type of therapy is different.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's
You wouldn't say
similar.
It's necessarily activating the immune response?
That's not primarily how we use it. We're still using chemotherapeutic drugs, which are toxic.
Right.
But we're using insulin to target the cancer cells.
Right.
Right. So that's the basis of insulin potentiation therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Insulin can be used to help direct the chemotherapeutic agents to their target, the cancer cells.
Instead of sending it all over the body.
Uh-huh. It's still going to get some, it's still going to go to normal cells, but preferentially the cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
And because we can do that, we can use lower doses of the chemo agents. And
what kind of percentage of doses compared to maybe regular chemotherapy?
We do 10 to 20% generally.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so we can avoid a lot of the side effects and the collateral damage.
That's huge.
Exactly, because that's what the patients are afraid of. I mean, when you speak to the patients, everybody knows somebody who's had chemotherapy and had such a poor, hard time, poor quality of life, lost all their hair, had terrible nausea or vomiting. And so they're all afraid of that. And so the nice thing with the lower doses of chemo, we avoid almost all of those side effects. Patients have a good quality of life. They can continue with doing the things that they normally do.
Yeah.
And so it's really a therapy that once patients find out about, they're on board. Also, there's patients that just can't tolerate. They just can't tolerate the high doses. They get so sick that they just can't even continue to do those doses because they're very sensitive. Or they've already gone through everything and there's nothing left for some of these patients when they come.
So from homeopathy to now working a lot with patients using IPT and some potentiated therapy, what was that transition like for you, and how have you seen, what kind of results have you seen in using low-dose chemo or IPT with cancer patients?
So I'm about what works. I don't know if you can get that. I always look for what works. And that's the bottom line. Chemo, IPT chemo, like I said, it's still chemo. It's toxic. But, you know, it works. And the reason that we use it here at the office is because we know that we have large tumors we need to shrink quickly, or tumors that are growing very rapidly. And chemo is very good at shrinking tumors. But if we can avoid, you know, the side effects, and a lot of that is immune, you know, will affect the immune system. You're mentioning immune system. It actually, chemo at full doses will, you know, inhibit the immune system.
Right.
So we're trying to prevent that, because then that's going to prevent the body from being able to get better. So we can still give a treatment that is effective, but we use it in conjunction with a lot of other therapies. I'm sure my colleagues are going to talking about all the different other therapies and modalities that we do here. And it's very important because while it's very effective, it's not the only treatment that the patients do. When patients do conventional chemotherapy, they're generally told, this is the only treatment you need to do right now, and, you know, don't do anything else while you're doing chemotherapy. Here, that's not true, because we know that the chemotherapy, while it's helpful for killing the cancer cells, chemotherapy does not kill circulating tumor cells, for example, the stem cells.
Yeah.
And so that's what causes actually metastasis later on. Oftentimes you may hear of patients who do chemotherapy and they are told they're in remission. And then weeks to months later, it's all back.
Right.
And why does that happen? And that's because chemotherapy doesn't kill the stem cells.
Right.
And so those will metastasize and then go to other locations. They may have already metastasized and they're not visible on a scan. So there are other therapies that need to address that. So it's used in conjunction with other therapies, so patients are doing all these other things as well at the same time as we're doing the IPT chemo.
So how would you inform somebody in terms of preparing their body for something like IPT? What does maybe that protocol look like for them, maybe even a few weeks in advance, as well as afterwards, to give them the best, you know, fighting chance at one, the IPT, you know, targeting the cancer and getting the best results there, but two, allowing their immune system to do what it's designed to do to be able to heal the body? Mm-hmm.
Well, if we have the luxury of time, we do try to prep patients. Sometimes we have patients, and unfortunately, it's unfortunate that we do get the patients that come at the very end. We have to just get started right away because they don't have that luxury of time. But if we do have that time, we absolutely want to address the nutritional issues.
Yeah,
that's the foundation. And so we have our nutritionist here, we have Dr. Roney here, and he spends a significant amount of time looking at all of their nutritional numbers, and we're trying to optimize those. So it's very, very important that patients understand that sugar, glucose, is primarily the food for cancer.
Right.
So we once patients understand that, they understand that they have to change their diet, because if they continue to eat processed foods, high amounts of sugar, they're feeding the cancer. And then if they, you know, try to do all these treatments, yet they're not changing that, that's not going to end up in a good result. So that's the primary focus, I would say, is like diet, nutrition, and making sure that patients are not feeding that cancer. And that's true all throughout. I mean, that is very true. And then the other, I mean, we also start patients it's the emotional aspect is very important.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have time to address that. So, but that's addressed when patients first come, and we have someone here that works with patients.
Yeah,
that's
we're interviewing one of your colleagues about the EVOX emotional healing system, which I'm excited to learn more about as well, because we know, you know, the mental emotional state of anybody directly can determine the fate of the disease in the body. We know that our thoughts and emotions can cause disease.
Absolutely.
And we know that they can help our body to heal disease.
Absolutely.
So it's huge. And yeah, I'm excited to share that interview with everyone. We're doing it today. So.
Right. Well, because these therapies don't work well when you're in a state of mind or that's it's non-healing.
Yeah.
And when patients are in, for whatever reason, whether it's emotional or physical or their immune system's not working, then these therapies that we do are not as effective.
Right.
Right. So we do try to also make sure that the immune system is weak. We want to make sure that we help that immune system to strengthen them, to prepare them for the chemo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time, and you know, it's been a real treat getting to learn more about what you guys do here at the center, and I'm just blown away at how many resources are here, and how knowledgeable your entire team is, and how much everybody really cares about finding the best solutions to help the patients. So. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. It's
yeah,
been great.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the Conquering Cancer Summit. Please share this with friends and family. Together, we truly can make a difference for the future of humanity in ending the cancer pandemic. Thank you, and I wish you ultimate health and happiness. Be well.